transfer of hardware, software or services to Huawei or technical interaction would be restricted.
Huawei faces tech headwinds on Google's Android system. It's Tuesday, May 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a refugee swap deal is made with Australia. President Trump's new immigration plan. Journalists endangered in Asia and elsewhere. Pollution-fueled asthma. Fighting wildfires from space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The giant U.S. internet search engine Google said Monday it is restricting China's Huawei from access to its Android operating system in compliance with the Trump administration's blacklisting of the world's second biggest smartphone maker as a national security threat. AP correspondent Charles de Liedsma reports that Google says it is reviewing the implications of last week's order requiring export licenses for technology sales to Huawei.
Google says it's complying with all U.S. government requirements and that services like Google Play and security for Google Play product will keep functioning on your existing Huawei device. But transfer of hardware, software or services to Huawei or technical interaction would be restricted by the American order that would strip Huawei phones of Google Maps and other services that require direct support.
AP's Charles de Liedsma. The Chinese firm is at the center of ongoing trade disputes between Washington and Beijing. The United States contends that Huawei's technology could be used to spy on Americans, allegations Huawei has repeatedly denied. China and the United States are in the midst of months-long trade talks with the world's two biggest economies, engaging in tit-for-tat tariff increases on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of each other's exports. Elsewhere, Taiwan is protesting China's decision to exclude the island from participation in the annual World Health Assembly, calling such action an unjustified political move that could harm global health. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
China considers Taiwan a renegade province that must be united with the mainland, even by force. One method China has of showing its displeasure with Taiwan's independent status is to prevent island officials from taking part in the World Health Assembly. This move is particularly ironic this year, as the theme of the assembly is universal health coverage. Taiwan's national health system is widely considered one of the best in the world. Taiwan's Minister of Health and Welfare, Shi Chung-chen, says the island is ready to share its experiences on how to achieve affordable, efficient universal health coverage with the global community.
However, under pressure from the People's Republic of China, Taiwan is currently excluded by the WHO from the Global Health Network. Inviting Taiwan to participate in the WHA will be consistent with WHO's proposal of health for all.
The health minister notes Taiwan's exclusion poses health risks to everyone. Chen says diseases do not stop at borders. He also says international cooperation is needed to combat epidemics that could spread to every corner of the world. Chen tells VOA he has written several letters to WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus to protest Taiwan's exclusion from the World Health Assembly and express concerns. Chen says he has received no response. He says WHO has even rejected Taiwan's offer for help in combating the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
Our president announced we will donate $1 million US dollar to combat Ebola. But this donation didn't accept by the WHO. So it's very pity in our situation. We want to do something, but WHO didn't accept us to do something for the world.
WHO estimates it needs $98 million to run its Ebola operation. It is facing a funding shortfall of some $63 million. Despite pressure from China, Taiwan's officials say they have received support for their bid to join the WHO from a number of countries, including the United States, Japan, Germany, and Australia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. A U.S. warship sails near Scarborough Shoal in South China Sea. Coast Guard gives U.S. new tool in disputed South China Sea. U.S. Senator convening meetings to warn business and academia of China threat. Latest deportation and disappearances rattle Thai diaspora. And Vietnam and the European Union snub U.S. on trade. Where do you go for expanded coverage of these stories? Well, stop by Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States ambassador to China is visiting Tibet to meet local officials and visit religious and cultural heritage sites. During his visit, Terry Branstad is expected to raise concerns about restrictions on Buddhism and the preservation of Tibet's unique culture and language, according to a statement emailed to members of the media by an embassy spokesman. Branstad is visiting the Tibetan Autonomous Region and neighboring Qinghai Province through Saturday. Branstad is the first American envoy to obtain access to the restricted Himalayan region in 4 years. Branstad's predecessor, Max Baucus, visited Tibet in May 2015. The visit follows a law passed in December that requires the United States to deny visas to Chinese officials who implement the policies that restrict access to Tibet for foreigners, especially journalists and diplomats. China immediately criticized the Reciprocal Access to Tibet Act, saying it was resolutely opposed to it on the basis that China considers Tibet an internal affair and such act by the United States was risking to cause serious harm to relations between the two countries. The United States government is required to begin denying visas to said Chinese officials by the end of this year. Meanwhile, in the land down under, two Rwandan men linked to the murder of 8 Western tourists in Uganda in the late 1990s have been allowed to resettle in Australia as part of a refugee swap deal with the United States. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us an Australian man who survived the attack says he is shocked the suspects have been granted asylum.
The two men were secretly resettled in Australia despite being accused of killing tourists. 4 Britons, 2 Americans and 2 New Zealanders, who were on a guerrilla watching tour in Uganda in the late 1990s. The suspects arrived in Australia last November as part of a deal to exchange refugees made between Canberra and the Obama administration in 2016. Though he criticised the agreement that's seen the transfer of a few hundred refugees from Australian migrant detention centres in the South Pacific, President Trump has honoured it. The Rwandan men were extradited to the US following the killings and held in immigration detention for 15 years after efforts to convict them failed. Their transfer to Australia has prompted difficult questions for the government on the eve of a general election. A former New Zealand minister said the resettlement was incredibly insensitive. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the men were carefully vetted.
The two individuals that have been subject of this reporting were subject to the security and character assessments and the work that must be done in terms of assessing whether there are any war crimes that are associated with persons who are coming as a refugee. And that security process cleared those individuals.
Peyton Rookie is an Australian who survived the atrocity.
I still can see images of people. I can still hear the gunshots. I can still see the burning truck. I can still see, you know, the unfortunate person who was murdered. And I can still vividly remember the reactions of other people when they found out the news that we had people killed. I didn't understand why we would let 2 people accused of this into Australia.
The suspects were reportedly members of a Hutu rebel group in Rwanda, which had links to the 1994 genocide of the minority Tutsi community. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the Indonesian Election Committee confirms that Joko Widodo has won the 2019 presidential election, with more than 55% of the vote in 21 provinces against former Army General Prabowo Subianto. 193 million voters cast ballots in the country's first simultaneous elections. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has unveiled an immigration plan that you should know about if you're thinking of moving to the United States, but it's a plan that likely will face too much political resistance to be implemented. His idea includes stopping the diversity immigrant visa, which is also known as the green card lottery, drastically reducing the number of family sponsorship visa, and moving towards a merit-based system. Democrats have rejected the plan since it does not address the fate of the 700,000 Dreamers. Those are individuals brought into the country illegally as children. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story.
30% of college-educated workers in science and engineering in the U.S. are foreign-born, according to the National Science Board. President Donald Trump wants more of these highly skilled immigrants.
A new legal immigration system that protects American wages, promotes American values, and attracts the best and brightest from all around the world.
The U.S. grants 1.1 million permanent legal residence visas, also known as green cards, each year. The majority are given to individuals with family ties to U.S. citizens, rather than based on skills or employment. Trump wants to cut the number of family-sponsored visas and increase those he calls merit-based. He wants to reduce humanitarian-based visas, such as for asylum seekers and refugees, by half, and stop the diversity visa program, the Green Card Lottery.
Random selection is contrary to American values.
Trump calls the new proposal the Build America Visa. It's determined by points, including age, English proficiency, education, offer of employment or promise of investment, and passing a test on American history and government. Democrats have rejected Trump's merit-based plan.
Are they saying family is without merit? Are they saying most of the people who have ever come to the United States in the history of our country are without merit because they don't have an engineering degree?
Also because it does not address DACA recipients, the 700,000 Dreamers, individuals who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children, and the millions of undocumented immigrants already here.
This is not something that has any path to becoming a law. And he kind of intimated that at the end of his speech when he said, you know, if this isn't enacted by Congress, then we'll enact it once we regain the presidency and the House. I think we already saw 2 years with this president and unified Republican Congress, and he still didn't get anything done on immigration. So I don't think that this proposal has any chance.
Nor does it address the shortage of workers for jobs that are not highly skilled.
The industries that are complaining about worker shortages are specifically looking for immigrants. Whether it's construction or agriculture or meatpacking, there is a lot of demand in those particular areas. And a high-skilled immigration system, although important, wouldn't address our other needs, which is on the lower skill level.
Trump also still insists on a border wall and wants to create a trust fund from border crossing fees to help pay for it. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News at the White House.
Coming up, journalists face new dangers. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, thousands of Chinese were outraged when they could not watch the Game of Thrones series finale. The streaming platform Tencent Video was restricted from airing it by the Chinese government because of ongoing trade disputes with the United States. Fans were forced to find the episode via piracy sites. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Turkey last year raised international awareness of the dangers of reporting on human rights abuses. But as Khashoggi's fiancée recently told lawmakers, the lack of the U.S. response to his death endangers journalists worldwide. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
In his last moments of life, Jamal Khashoggi became the most visible face of scores of targeted journalists around the world. Almost 8 months later, his death is still unreal, his fiancée told U.S. lawmakers.
I still cannot make human sense of it. I still cannot understand.
Khashoggi, one of 54 journalists murdered for their work in 2018.
In 9 out of 10 cases of murdered journalists, the killers are never brought to justice. This impunity sends an empowering message to those seeking to use violence to censor journalists.
250 journalists were jailed last year, many of them for reporting on human rights abuses.
Turkey, Egypt, and China all had high numbers of journalists imprisoned for reporting on human rights.
Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman gave the order to kill Khashoggi, according to U.S. intel officials, a finding President Trump questioned.
I hope that the Congress can initiate an international investigation. It can lead an international investigation into this act. And I think that international interests should not supersede values, and being allies can also mean that these things, these people, the people responsible for this murder can be brought to justice. And I believe that President Trump can initiate this as well.
Saudi Arabia should face consequences, said lawmakers of the president's own party.
There are people within the Saudi Arabian government that need to be held to account, and I, for one, believe that Magnitsky sanctions need to be meted out against those individuals, and I'm sure we have very good actionable information on them for their role in this terrible atrocity.
Consequences that can be levied, given the United States' economic and security leverage over Saudi Arabia, say analysts. Saudi Arabia can also take steps.
Take action with some of the human rights activists that they've actually detained now for over a year, allegedly have subjected some of those people to not only abuse, but even torture while in their prisons. These are things that within the king and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman have the power to actually provide those people with amnesty. And that would go some distance, I think, to demonstrating to an American audience and to members of Congress that, in fact, some turn was being made in the Saudi relationship.
A remedy with international consequences.
We have let you down, let Jamal down, and in so doing have let down people all over the world who seek to be free.
Helping send the message that journalists are not a target. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
This news from VOA Asia. In a new survey, the European Chamber of Commerce in China says the trade war has impacted 25% of its members engaged in U.S.-bound exports from their operations in China. The trade conflict has come on top of several other problems faced by European companies in China. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, childhood asthma is the most common serious chronic disease among children, according to the World Health Organization. VOA's Kevin Enix reports on a new study that says traffic pollution is a major cause of the disease.
We already know that traffic pollution is a big contributor to climate change, but new research suggests it's also a huge driver of health problems around the world.
Recent estimates show that air pollution is actually the leading environmental health risk factor globally, more than any other environmental cause of disease.
According to the World Health Organization, air pollution causes an estimated 3.7 million premature deaths every year. But a new study from George Washington University in Washington, D.C., points to a specific pollutant, nitrogen dioxide, NO2, from car emissions, as the leading cause of childhood asthma in many cities around the world.
Nitrogen dioxide pollution has a really important impact on the number of children worldwide that are being diagnosed with asthma. And in fact, the largest impacts were seen in cities, where up to almost about 50% of new asthma cases among children in some cities worldwide were attributable to nitrogen dioxide pollution.
And a really troubling element of the research, the cities where all this asthma is happening have levels of NO2 that are within limits considered safe by the World Health Organization.
One of the more surprising findings for us was that actually over 90% of NO2-related pediatric asthma incidents occurred in areas that already met the World Health Organization guideline for annual average nitrogen dioxide pollution of 21 parts per billion.
It's not much of a surprise that most of the cities with the highest levels of NO2 pollution are in three countries: China, India, and the United States. The solution, these researchers say, is to continue the fight against climate-warming greenhouse gases, because the two problems are so closely related.
One of the things that we found in our study was that cities that had higher nitrogen dioxide levels also had higher greenhouse gases. And so one thing that can be done would be to avoid burning fossil fuels, reduce it in any way we can.
The researchers say they hope to do more studies to understand which specific chemicals in NO2 pollution trigger asthma, so they can help target those specific sources of emissions. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Wildfires can burn in most places of the world, and they're often discovered by aircraft pilots, drivers, or spotters in observation towers, but also increasingly by remote sensors, which alert authorities to fire outbreaks. Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles, where a new ground-based camera system and satellites in space are helping firefighters to monitor wildfires.
A remote camera captured a fire that raged last August in a canyon near Los Angeles, threatening vital communication links. It provided crucial information.
I was able to take my phone, control the camera, point it at the fire, take it to the incident commander, and show him what the threat was. And he took appropriate action to direct air tanker drops to protect that peak.
More than 100 remote cameras on mountaintops provide a view of 60% of the electrical company's service area. More are on their way, all monitored along with data from ground-based weather sensors in an operations center of Southern California Edison, an electrical utility company. Fires here, like those up and down the U.S. West Coast, are getting fiercer. 10 of the 20 most destructive fires in California have occurred since 2015.
Climate is changing. We've had many years of drought leading up to this, which has caused millions of trees across the state to die or be weakened because of disease. We've also had a history of fire suppression policy, which has not kept our forests healthy.
And more people are living closer to wilderness areas in places like Paradise, a Northern California town destroyed by wildfire in November. State officials said Wednesday the power lines of another company, Pacific Gas and Electric, sparked that blaze. The space agency NASA also tracks fires from the air and space.
Aircraft observations, of course, from manned aircraft and unmanned aircraft in some instances, but primarily focus on the global perspective, looking at observations from our satellite-based platforms that NASA has and that other agencies have, European Space Agency and the like.
The information helps before, during, and after a wildfire.
So we can do active fire detections. We can also do observations of the type of vegetation that's there. And most recently, we've had a satellite that, an instrument that went onto the International Space Station called JEDI.
It measures levels of biomass, the trees and brush that fuel fires. Fire is part of nature's ecosystem. But with the fire season getting longer and fires more intense, the remote sensors are a welcome tool for firefighters dealing with the challenge. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone who is listening to our program on PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. Thanks for following us today. You can find us as well on iTunes and SoundCloud, of course, VOA Asia Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. We send our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Nashwan Kali, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.